This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to Open for Business, the show that dives into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. This morning on the show, Celine Ting, she's the co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. Based in Malaysia and Hong Kong, Open Academy is the education arm of marketing tech consultancy Open Minds and is trying to bridge the gap between academic learning and real-world skills through micro-learning principles. The platform allows individuals to take 5-minute lessons in the hopes of upskilling learners on the go and covers a wide range of topics. Although their roots were obviously in digital marketing and marketing itself, it now talks about website optimization, content creation, and much more. Similar to Masterclass or Skillshare, the lessons are delivered by industry experts, with Open Academy leaning on local expertise, aiming to make it more relevant and engaging. Today, we explore why a marketing tech company started an online education platform, why Celine decided to lead the initiative and get some skin in the game here, the current state of the business and the future of it as well. Celine, welcome to the studio.
Hello, Roshan. Thank you so much for having me.
Did I do a decent enough justice by the company?
It was great.
So let's do the first question, right? I'd like to get a sense for why these kind of businesses were started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see Skillshare, Masterclass, all these kind of, there's a lot to learn from other players out there. What was the gap in learning and education that Open Academy was built to address?
It was very much there were two situations, right? Mm-hmm. One was very much the credibility aspect of things. So especially during the pandemic, it wasn't so prevalent before the pandemic, but especially during the pandemic, I'm sure you've seen left, right, everywhere, especially on the digital platforms, gurus coming up everywhere,
yeah, for sure.
Trainings happening on Facebook, on TikTok, every single platform available. And we realized that people were getting frustrated with the content that they were receiving. They were paying, they were putting out a lot of money, but they were not getting the content that they want or they deserve. And we realized that it's because there's this gap there. There is like, you don't know, sometimes you don't really know who you're learning from. And we wanted to kind of close that gap and ensure that the people that are teaching, training, educating you are the people that are actually doing the work, that are actually, you know, walking walking the talk, right? So essentially are people that are doing the actual job, having the experience to be able to share. And then number two, it's really the Southeast Asian market, where we realize that a lot of the content that we see available right now, especially learning content, is very much Western-based. Or if, let's say, you go towards maybe like China route, right? Maybe then you get learning content from those platforms. But there are not a lot of people or experiences or insights on the Southeast Asian market. And you cannot find experiences and learning content directly that can impact people who are working in the Southeast Asian market. And it's not easy to find these kinds of content. Even just looking for insights like data is also very difficult, especially if you want to find consolidated data. So we thought that, you know, we at Southeast Asia, I mean, even in Malaysia itself, we have great industry practitioners. We have people who are doing so well across the market, but nobody knows about these people. Nobody knows who you are. And we want to be able to turn their experience and insights into learning content so that people who are working in the Southeast Asian region can benefit from the content.
Yeah, sometimes that local lens is very important, right? Because there's local context. There is little things that we do in our country or in the region that differ from where the very westernized culture or even further East Asia, right?
Yes. It's
like Asia is not a monolith, and neither is Southeast Asia for that matter. Now, the next question that comes to mind is, yeah, that's great, but why did a marketing tech company decide that, listen, this is the challenge for us. Mm-hmm. Open Minds is going to start a new division and you're going to lead it, Celine, and we're going to tackle this. Why did Open Minds venture into this?
So, I mean, on the front, I think Open Minds is known as a MarTech consultancy for the last 10. I mean, this year is their 12th year. Mm-hmm. But actually, behind the scenes, we do work a lot and are very involved in the education side of things. So we work a lot with partners, with universities, with businesses, and help them actually upskill, actually speak to the students. So we are very, very involved in the education side of things. And I think it was kind of like a natural progression to go into the education side because we're all very passionate about it. So we have always been doing it even throughout the MarTech consultancy side. We just decided that, hey, let's just turn it into something that we actually want to do. So it started off with more like, okay, we're helping companies with their MarTech consultation and, you know, their tech development and marketing and things like that. And what better way than to upskill your internal team to be able to do it rather than we can support and consult, but right. You know, and then so we started with upskilling them internally, like the clients.
That was already training and development.
Correct.
But very marketing focused.
Correct. Very focused in marketing and things like that. And then it started to grow from there. So then people started looking for us for, oh, I don't need you to do my MarTech. I just want you to come in and help us out, like train our internal team.
My marketing team needs help. We don't know how to adapt to performance marketing,
correct,
TikTok, whatever new trend is,
correct,
in. Can you help us?
Yes. So then it became like an upskilling thing, and then it just slowly progressed into, let's turn it into an education arm, properly develop specific courses.
Formally spin it off and see what else we can do in the
correct
longer term.
Exactly. Ah. That's how it kind of came from there.
And in the beginning, this was very physical in nature. It didn't start with the app.
No, not at all. So we started off with because we started off with a lot of corporate kind of training, right? So obviously,
were these open mind clients?
Yes, correct. Okay. So then prior to this, physical training was kind of the only way. I mean, people know about online training, but nobody usually really wants it. Like people want, I'm paying you, so you better be there, right? So like they wanted to be like a physical training. We had to be there a couple days, a couple weeks, depending on the situation. And then we upskill them. But obviously, I mean, as everyone knows, the infamous 2020, the pandemic hit, and that wasn't great.
Forced digitalization.
The thing is that, obviously, as a MarTech company, we've always wanted to go digital. Mm-hmm, I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? We definitely want to go digital. We just didn't think we would need to go digital so soon. So when we decided that, okay, 2020 will be the year, we will go all out for our trainings and things like that. And then obviously the pandemic hit. And then that's when we decided, okay, crap, now we can't do physical training. Mm-hmm. So what else? What else can we do? How do we digitalize in a way where it makes sense for Open Minds, it makes sense for Open Academy, and there is a growth there, there's scalability there.
And we'll dive into that that journey a little later. But today, what's the working relationship like between Open Academy and Open Minds? Is it very active, or do they kind of leave you to run the business as you see fit?
A little bit of both. I think in terms of Open Academy in itself, we are a business and we are an entity. So we have our own sets of clients, we have our own sets of services, and we service and we work with different partners and businesses.
If you want P&L, I presume.
Yes, our own P&L as well. That's great. Essentially, Open Minds is still the parent company. That means that they do provide in terms of resources, in terms of support, in terms of support of my, you know, understanding of the business and how do we correct. So like, obviously, knowledge resource, getting insights, advice, guidance, also from the board of directors team and things like that. So still very much involved in that aspect. So they do come in to support in terms of the resources. We still do trainings and also obviously on the app itself that there are marketing content. So obviously Open Minds will become the industry practitioners that create the content for that. So it's very much that kind of working relationship and work very closely with the internal team to get the things running.
And I presume that Open Minds is funded Open Academy so far?
Yes, correct. So we're definitely supported by Open Minds. Mm.
Did you raise any external funding, or was it all funding from Open Minds?
We did. So in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, we actually joined an accelerator program by Scale Up Malaysia. And we actually, so we were actually one of the... we're actually one of the 11 that... that got funded by Scale Up and also Quest Ventures in Singapore. So that is one of our also external funders that are coming in, And then currently we are also part of a edutech accelerator called EduSpace that is based in Singapore that focus very much on the edutech side to grow edutech, scale edutech across Southeast Asia, and then working with a lot of Southeast Asian or Asian edutech companies and growing them. Mm-hmm. So we are also very much part of their ecosystem and also growing together with them and going into the different markets.
Now, that could be a key strategy from a regional perspective to be part of a larger network.
Yes.
We'll dive into that further on as well. Given that, you've been a bit open mind since 2016, correct?
Yep.
And you were, I think, business development, if I'm not sure.
Social media executive. Okay. I don't know if that is still.
And today you still do some digital consultancy with them.
Correct.
But you took up formally the managing director role of Open Academy in 2019.
Yes.
Why did you do this? Why did you decide, you know what, I want to be on board with this Open Academy venture?
So I started off as a social media executive, which means that I basically did a lot of social media marketing kind of thing, which is ad buying and social media posts, content creation, and dealing with that. So as I grew on that side, I started to actually be exposed to the training side of things when I was with Open Minds. So as a social media executive, I became a digital consultant and then started to just be part of the training process, upskilling and then helping whenever clients come and say like, oh, I need learning. And then I'm part of the group of people that are actually executing the training and doing things like that. And I found a lot of passion in that. Mm-hmm. I found a lot of, I just felt very...
Was a call to adventure in a lot of ways.
Kind of. I felt like it was the right thing to do, right? So I found that I was adding value, which is very important to me. So I felt like, oh, okay, what I'm teaching, what I'm upskilling them, they really feel like they're learning something. Sometimes when you're especially in the physical classroom, when you're teaching them and then they have that aha moment or when you're saying something and they're like, oh, you know, I didn't know that. And then it just felt right.
It felt very real.
Correct. It felt very real. So it felt like I was doing something that is adding value and it's something that is definitely needed. Mm-hmm. So when... this proposal came up for me to kind of take on Open Academy. So it started off as like an internal thing and everyone was kind of doing it. And then when it was proposed that, oh, why don't you...
So Open Minds looked through their roster like, oh, everything Celine can do this. Yeah. Celine, do you want to do this?
Yeah, so it was a period of time where I was like kind of transitioning, kind of figuring it out. And then they kind of say like, why don't you try Open Academy, right? Just, you know, start leading the education side and go through that motion first. So that's when I decided, okay, maybe I'll try. So that's like, you said 2019 as managing director. I started off kind of like growing Open Academy in 2018. So we did more of a beta, figuring out what kind of courses. We did like small courses and small trainings in the office. Yeah, we tried to test things out and see if it was a fit for me and see if it made sense, you know, for my journey.
Celine Open Academy fit as well.
Correct.
Celine, we got more to get into, but first a few messages. Folks, I've been speaking with Celine Ting. She's the co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. I'm Roshan Kanis and you're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breathe freely, Malaysians. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanisan, and this morning I'm speaking with Celine Ting. She's the co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. Open Academy is the education arm of marketing tech consultancy Open Minds. Celine, earlier you gave us a sense for what the gap in the market was that Open Minds saw and why you came along for this journey as well, because you were working at Open Minds. Mm-hmm. You were a social media consultant with them, focused on that, but got involved with the marketing training, and eventually Open Minds was like, okay, Celine, do you want to lead this initiative? So this required building from scratch. What gave you the confidence to do this? Because, you know, end of the day, you were an employee, and not all employees can go on to become founders.
Yeah.
What gave you that confidence that you could do this?
Maybe you can call it blind confidence at that point. I mean, in the beginning stages, it was very much like, okay, let's just try it out, right? When I was given this proposal in 2018, it was very much like, let's give it a try. Let's start off with
test it out,
start off with some digital marketing trainings, do some ads, run some content, reach out to our clients and see if this is something that we can do even for public classes, have the public come in, sit through, get their feedback. So I think it was a lot of those kind of testings that got me a little bit more confident in the fact that, okay, I think I can do this, right?
They also didn't throw you in the deep end.
No, I mean, yes and no. I would say that no, obviously, I've always had support from Open Minds, and I really appreciate the support from the founding team. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, I knew nothing, right, about like building an arm at that point, building an arm, building this from scratch. So I had a lot to learn, and I had a lot to learn from them. But again, I'm grateful for the support that they have provided me. They kind of guided me through what needs to be done. We've mistakes were made. We had to change, pivot, you know, things like that. I think that's like a whole learning journey to get to where I am.
And do you have any skin in the game here? Do you have any equity stake in Open Academy?
Yes, I do. So I think at this point, especially in 2020, where we decided that, okay, look, this is a thing, and this is something that we can turn into an actual business.
Not a hobby anymore.
Not a hobby anymore, right? Actual business. Then it became official, and then now Open Academy is an entity in itself. So yes, I do have skin in the game.
So it was no longer a department in 2020.
No, it's not, no longer a department.
Self-incorporated.
Correct.
Subsidiary, of course, of
Correct.
Open Minds. And last year, I know it was there was a bit of a change with mm-hmm. Open Academy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you had physical training roots.
Yes.
Had to evolve with 2020 to become more digital. Had an app that came out after that. Mm-hmm. And last year, what was called Open Academy 2.0, which became a lot more, had some tools for industry practitioners.
Yes,
so your
correct.
Content creators there. We'll get into that in a sec. But I want to get a sense for the journey so far, mm-hmm. right? So you gave us a little bit of that 2018, 2019, mm-hmm. 2020 journey from your perspective. But from the product side of things,
yeah.
Yes, we know that it was a in-person training
yes.
with Open Minds clients. Mm-hmm. But once this became its own business, its own mm-hmm. company, what did the first version of the product start looking mm-hmm. like? Was it still physical? Was it all aboard the app train? What was it like?
It was still physical at one point. So we started to acquire our own clients and then did trainings with them. So we became HRDF certified, and then we got our own clients, and then we started doing physical training. But when 2020 hit, again, I think that's when we had to figure out how to digitalize. And after seeing that, initially the thought process was, oh, let's just turn something digital and put it online. And maybe that's an easy way, right, to just mm-hmm. do that. But we thought that it's not really scalable. And if we want to go digital and we want to, you know, make it a point to go digital, let's do it properly, mm-hmm. right? So we decided, okay, maybe an app is the best platform. But before we even developed, even version 1.0 some of you may know in the past, there was a web app that was developed. So it was a one-week thing. We were like, okay, let's do this. So in like 2 weeks, the first week was deciding what kind of content we want to do, how we want to do it, who is involved, who is part of this thing. And then we recorded the content. It was really, really bootleg mm-hmm. style. At that point, there was no setup for an online.
Point and shoot.
Yes, point and shoot, figure it out. We did like 10, I think.
I presume marketing content at
yes,
that point?
Yes, because that was the easiest thing for us.
Let's pull someone from Open Minds.
Yeah, so there was I was part of it, and then we had a few people that were part of it. So we had about 30, 40 videos that we have recorded, and we said, okay, let's edit it in a way. Initially, we were like, oh, maybe we edit it in, we shot it in like a non-portrait mode, so landscape mode, which didn't really work for the phone. And then we were like, oh, actually, we should do it in an app. So it's all along.
And this was pre-TikTok as well.
Yeah, it's pre-TikTok. So we were like, okay, we got to figure it out. And then we decided that, okay, we'll do it apps. Like, at that point, Instagram story style,
yeah, yeah.
right?
App so native.
Yes, correct. So we were like, okay, let's do that. Obviously, I mean, maybe for some of you, it's easy to develop an app in a week. For us, it's not the case. So we were like, okay, let's try web app. Right. So then we decided to create this, bundle it up, and then sell it as like a digital marketing starter kit. That was what it's called. Digital marketing starter kit. We sold it. It was on the web app, really, like you had to scan and then, I don't know, watch it on the phone on a website. And it was an app version of the website and everything. And then we just had some webinars, like some public webinars, and then just sold it there, right? So we did some online webinars, invited some guests over, and then sold the
courses.
Digital marketing starter kit. And then people started buying them. And then we thought, oh, wow, this is really, really bootleg already.
So you weren't selling a subscription, but you were selling
the starter kit first. Yeah, we started off with that because we wanted to know whether it wasn't the content.
Whether there was a product market
correct.
Fit as well, right?
Yeah, we didn't, we were confident in the content itself, but we just weren't sure if the delivery was the correct delivery. Mm. Like, will people watch it on their phones? Do they want to watch it on their phones? So when we managed to sell a few of those, quite a few of those bundles, and we realized that this could be something. And that's actually when the development of 1.0 started. That's when we decided how should we do this, how should we structure it and everything. So then that's when all of that came about. Yeah.
And what was the biggest challenge early on, right? Especially with 1.0 mm-hmm. and even leading up to 2.0. Mm-hmm. When you look back, what were some of the biggest challenges in the journey?
Yeah. Well, I'm not a tech person. I do digital consultation, and obviously mm-hmm. I know some elements of tech and how to integrate that, but I don't code, unfortunately.
And there was no GPT too. Can you code this for me, please?
No, exactly, right? Now you guys have it easy, but I don't know how to code. So I think closing that gap between understanding how the app works and app store policies and Play Store policies and understanding that whole process. I think the development side, we have a great team that is able to develop it. I don't think that's a concern, but understanding the app specific side of things is a challenge, because you need to, I mean, as we know, App Store has been, you know, increasingly more strict with obviously certain policies, and we had to kind of figure out how to work it so that it makes sense for obviously the users, but also at the same time don't jeopardize, you know, the app and everything. So that's a learning curve for me. Secondly, I think with Open Academy at 1.0 was the curation of the content, which is why I think you shared about a little bit about 2.0 came about. But we knew that we wanted industry practitioners. That's like something that we were not willing to give up. And we knew that that was something that, because it's our calling, right? It's credibility and we want credible content. So we know that industry practitioners is important. So, but to create content with industry practitioners does take a long time. Nothing to do with the industry practitioner's problem. It's just a longer process because it just requires more time. You need to curate that together. Resources, recording and everything. So yeah.
And at that point, So at that point, you were producing it, right? You bring subject matter yes. experts into a studio, you
Correct.
Record it, you edit it, you
Correct.
Put it up. So all yes. the subject matter expert needs to bring is the subject matter expertise.
Yes, correct. So that was the situation. Mm-hmm. And it's just a longer process.
All right. And you started with that. So the MVP, the testing, mm-hmm. the market validation was doing a webinar selling the starter kit. And that time you were selling a product, mm-hmm. basically. But you've switched to subscription. Mm-hmm. When did that switch in the business model go from selling courses to subscription model?
It was actually at the beginning. We started right. off...
So that was always the plan.
Yes, that was always the plan. That was always the plan in terms of subscription, because we were toying between the ideas of a few different models and business models. The most straightforward way that at that point we thought was, okay, let's just go with the subscription model because that's the most straightforward. People understand it already. People know how it works. There's also a free option that people can use and can consume that content. And then obviously if they're interested in more of the content, they can get the premium content. So it's just the most straightforward way at that point.
And we've got a little bit of time before we enter the news bulletin. Mm-hmm. At what point did you realize that? When did you start formally monetizing the platform?
Mm-hmm. So when we launched the app, we did like a whole campaign for the pandemic. It was like it was called the Stay Open campaign, where we just gave out a bunch of free accounts onto the platform and wanted people to just test the content and consume the content. And we just wanted to gather enough data to be able to know that, okay, this is working, this is not working, what do we need to do and everything. So we just decided to give out all the content. So that ended end of 2021. And then that's when the monetization actually happened in 2022. Yep.
All right, we'll dive into that and the revenue or customer acquisition after the news bulletin, Celine. Folks, I've been speaking with Celine Ting, co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You're listening to Open for Business. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breaking financial matters, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and this morning I'm speaking with Celine Ting, co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. Open Academy is a division or a an arm of marketing tech consultancy Open Minds. Celine, last year, Open Academy, the app made it into its 2.0 version, which became a lot more industry practitioner focused, or at least providing more tools. Because earlier you were talking about how the content was made, which was you were producing it, right? You bring subject matter expertise into a studio, you record it, you produce it, you edit it, and then you put it up onto your platform. Obviously, there are roots in marketing knowledge, which is where you could tap into Open Minds and a little bit of synergy there. But you've gone into other knowledge areas as well. I think Aaron Sama has done a with a show with you guys as well. I know Frida Liu, former colleague of mine, also has done content with you guys. So other avenues are being explored here. Talk to us about the upgrade last year and how this focus on creators was supposed to take Open Academy at that point to the next level.
Yeah. So as mentioned, I think because we realized that the duration to create content was a little bit long.
Especially if you want to do it all yourself.
Yes, correct. So we, but also as we were speaking with the with some of the creators, we realized that a lot of them are either already doing some form of learning content or really want to do learning content, right? They want to know how to start. They want to figure out where to, how to even start this and if, you know, which platform is the right platform to actually start this. So that's when we decided that, okay, maybe this is something, there's something there as well, right? How do we give the right tools to the industry practitioners to be able to then create content without needing to come all the way, you know, to Ara Damansara to kind of find it, but essentially be able to have a platform and the tools to be able to just create content in the comfort of their own home, to be able to turn whatever that they have, their industry insights, experience into learning content on the platform and be able to monetize, obviously, from there. So I think that's how the idea came about, and that's how we decided that, okay, let's develop something that's more industry practitioners centric. So that's where the Creator Hub, that's what we call it, the Creator Hub actually is developed, which is the Open Academy version 2.0 happened. So everything that has been shot, everything that we're doing with the creators are still there. So we still do content with the creators, we still curate content. But if any of the creators want to be able to take charge of their own content, want to be able to build their own branding, their identity, credibility, create content, build their own profile, build their own community, is able to basically build it on the platform itself.
Right, so you've still got the older, the the what you were doing before, but now you've opened up a new avenue to work with them as essentially partners on the platform.
Yes, correct.
It does sound like you're not moving entirely from the masterclass Skillshare model. You're not moving entirely away from that, but you're opening up this YouTube-esque element or funnel here. Not funnel, element here. Why move into this strategy from a business perspective?
Again, it's just to be able to tap into the industry practitioners and giving them the power to be able to create their own content. It's also kind of like an extension of what we are already doing. So we are already turning industry practitioners' insight into content, but sometimes people just want to know directly from the practitioners themselves, wants to know more, they want to know more content, they want to just get more content from these people that they've been learning from on the platform and they're able to just get it directly straight there.
This is very much in a similar vein to Nebula in the US, right? A lot of big YouTubers are partners with, or part owners of Nebula. So they've got content on YouTube, but they've also got content on Nebula itself, which they hopefully can monetize a little better. You are stepping on YouTube's toes a little bit, and we'll get into that, but you are now giving creators more autonomy over how they build their communities, how they build their content. How active do you want your creators to be on the on this avenue of the platform?
It's entirely up to them. Obviously, ideally, the scenario is that they are as active as possible. But the because they have control of their content, they also have control on how not to say how much they want to monetize, but how they monetize the platform, right? So the more content that they create, the more people want to, you know, pay for the content that they are creating. So essentially, it's kind of like a, if you know Patreon, it's kind of like Patreon. So you pay for like a, you pay the creators and the creators will create content consistently for you. And in order for you to keep your quote unquote subscribers or keep your followers in, you know, tuning in, you need to continuously create content on the platform.
Okay, could you elaborate a little further on the incentive structure there?
Sure. It's a credit kind of system. So essentially what can happen, what happens is that users or learners who are interested in this specific creators will be able to just pay credits to the creators to be able to consume the content that they have on the platform.
So like Audible, you get one credit a month.
Yes.
Then you can use it to buy whatever book you want on the platform.
Yes, correct, correct.
So this kind of situation, you get an X amount of credits depending on the plan.
Yes.
And then with that, you can, maybe one course is worth.
Correct.
Okay, got it, got it. So this is separate from the subscription model itself.
Correct. So we're actually moving slightly away from the subscription model as of this year. We're working towards the credit side of things right now. So we're going towards purchasing credits and being able to purchase content via credits as we realize that with the subscription, which we just went in when it did 1.0, we also had some feedback that maybe users only want to learn specific kind of content.
Correct.
And with credits, they're able to control how they want to spend their credits and how they want to actually put in the credits and content and things like that. And they may not need to fork out a larger sum of money at one go because it's credit-based. So you buy a small amount, you can basically pay for a small amount of content on the platform.
I guess it also allows you to retain them longer, right?
Yes, because correct.
I think monthly you're at 68 ringgit a month and annually you're at about 370 ringgit a month.
Correct.
A year. On a yearly basis sounds better, but on a monthly basis, because you don't know how long you want to use the platform, right? You don't want to be locked in for a year.
Correct.
A bit more on a heftier side of things. So this model gives people more, again, more autonomy in terms of how they want to utilize their credits.
Correct. That's the plan.
So
right?
Like ClassPass, basically, but for education.
Yes.
Now the creators can create their own content. But what's stopping them from putting their content on YouTube as well, or YouTube only versus your platform?
Yeah. We're not stopping them from putting things onto YouTube. Our goal, like I say, on the platform itself is very industry practitioner centric. Mm-hmm. So we pride ourselves in credibility and ensuring that whoever that is on our platform. So when we say that you can become a creator on a platform, not everyone can become a creator on a platform. You do have to go through some form of QC, some conversations with us, documentation and things like that to be QC, to know that you are an industry practitioner, you know what you're talking about before, you know, we want to work together with you and become a creator on the platform. So in that element, you're already, your credibility is kind of already there.
There's value in being on the network, on the platform.
Correct. So we,
or that's at least what you're hoping.
Yes, we're ensuring that, you know, whatever that you're creating or who you, when you're on the platform, people already know that, oh, I'm learning directly from industry practitioner. I don't have to search you up, look you up over and over again to know who you are and things like that. Mm-hmm. For YouTube, I think we encourage the creators, if you want to create on YouTube, go for it, because it's a very good brand awareness kind of tool, especially on YouTube. If you want to get visibility, you want to do that. But it's also a very saturated market. And not everyone who goes onto YouTube is going there for a learning kind of behavior.
Yeah, monetization also isn't great for Malaysians, or Malaysian creators, unless you get really big.
Correct, correct. So it's also not easy. So I think having a platform that you focus on the learning content, that you focus on turning your experience into learning content and monetizing from there, it's a great platform for you to be on. The community is there to learn. The community there is, you know, has the the intention to learn.
More captive audience. People are paying for this kind of content.
Correct.
Maybe you can pay a little bit more.
Correct.
Able to monetize better.
Correct.
Hopefully. Now, all this requires users, right? You can have all the creators in the world with great content, but if there are no users buying credits and spending those credits, then you have a problem
where
you can't incentivize the creators.
Correct.
So talk to us about the current size of the user base, because I know last year the goal was to hit 100,000 app users across Southeast Asia, of course, and to sign around 70 to 100 creators in the short term. Where are you in terms of users and creators today?
Sure. We have about 50 creators currently on the platform. So we are in the process of getting to where we're going at. In terms of the user base, we're currently growing. We have about 80,000 downloads on the platform. So we have, because there are users that are able to use the platform without needing to sign up. So we have about 80,000 downloads, and then we have about 30,000 signups on the platform at this point. So we're working, we're getting there. As of recently, we have been in Singapore working with some partners to be able to push the app to people, to companies in Singapore as well. And then also, besides the B2C side, we also do B2B. So we have a number of different clients that work together with us to create some exclusive content or also have their internal team be able to consume the content on the platform. So those are some of the data right now that we currently have.
So you've got some B2B partners.
Yes,
you've got 30,000 signups. You've got 80,000 downloads.
Yes.
Because there is a basic tier that people can use. So, I mean, it's a good acquisition tool, I guess,
correct,
at least for the first part.
Correct.
50 creators so far. We're going to go into a few messages. When we come back, we'll talk about where the business is in terms of revenue, what the growth ahead mm-hmm. looks like, and whether you're looking to raise any external funding.
Okay.
Folks, I've been speaking with Celine Ting, co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. I'm Roshan Kanderson. You're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breakfast for Masters, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanderson, and this morning I'm speaking with Celine Ting, co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. Celine, you've been on this journey now for about 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned earlier, about 80,000 downloads on the app side of things, 30,000 signups, and the model is moving away from subscription over to credits so that users can spend their credits where they want, as opposed to having to consume all the content there.
Yes.
Because unlike Netflix or YouTube, you don't necessarily want to be consuming all that different content. You may have a specific focus when it comes
yes.
to L&D. Where is the business today in terms of revenue?
We are doing okay. I think in last year in itself, we have hit 6 figures, close to 7. And then this year, our goal and target revenue for this year is actually going into the 2 million mark. So we are on track for that for this year. So I don't know, if you have me back, maybe I'll update.
Oh, for sure. Especially with the changes coming in, it'll be yeah. great to see how it all plays out. So the goal today, this year, is 2 million. You've hit, you're on the 6 figure, going to 7 figures mm-hmm. Last year. And overall, still at goal, 100,000 users,
yes.
that benchmark there.
Correct.
You're now in kind of competition with YouTube. You're in competition with Skillshare, mm-hmm. Masterclass, as well as Nebula as mm-hmm. well, but that's more a US thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the strategy to go get this done, right? Because it's all going to come down to customer acquisition end of the day.
Yeah. So in the next phase of our app, we're actually planning to go into certification learning. So meaning being able to still learn in bite sizes. We still want to be able to encourage micro-learning and learning in bite sizes, but being able to be rewarded, being certified after you've gone through the process and courses that you learn in bite sizes. So with that in mind, currently we're in the process of working together with a few universities to be able to reach out to graduating students to be able to tap into this form of learning, micro-learning, and be certified to be able to upskill from there. We are also working with some partners in Singapore to be able to tap into the business and corporate side of things. So we are working with a partner called Digital Business Network. They are a network of
for businesses.
Correct, right? So digital business together, whereby they have different services that they provide for different clients, and then we are coming in with the upskilling, learning, and training elements for some of the clients that they have. So very much going into the Singapore market at this point and working with partners across Singapore. In terms of the creator side, we are actually establishing a partnership with a company called Future Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Future Lab is a mentorship platform, right? So it's great. We have a great synergy. So that means that these people who are mentoring, currently already their mentors, are actually industry practitioners. And mm-hmm. we want to be able to tap into their pool of mentors and turn them into industry practitioners, turning some of their mentorships into actual digitalized learning content on the platform. So those are a few ways that we're currently working with a few different partners to be able to tap into this market.
So partnerships to create more creators on your
yes.
platform in networks that are already operational, more aggressive acquisition,
yes.
As well as that certification. Now, with that certification and partnering with universities,
mm-hmm.
you're now entering the Coursera, mm-hmm. Udemy kind of positioning already. So
correct.
Kind of a few different offerings at play here as you continue to grow. Also LinkedIn, right? Because LinkedIn's got all these courses
yes,
and
correct.
Stuff. So what's going to make your certification more desirable than
sure.
you know, Coursera, Udemy, all these other players out there?
Sure. So that's why we're working with universities, right? That's why we're working with these players. Besides university, we are also tapping into the job portal side of things, connecting the dots between jobs and then universities and job portals. And then obviously, ideally, we will be working with employers in the future, but basically being able to close the gap between these mm-hmm. three things, because we realize that there is a gap between graduating students looking for a job, and then obviously the clients or the employers' expectations of what the, you know, a candidate's requirements are. So we're trying to see if there's a way we can bridge basically this gap when we do provide the certification learning. So ideally, the scenario would be that when we work with universities and we are certified in terms of that, we are also together with the job portal so that graduating students taking the courses can directly be linked to specific job portals or be directed to specific jobs and hopefully, ideally, eventually to get jobs.
Are you working with any particular job portals? Because there are many of them right now.
We are working with two. One, it's called MyKerja. So they are a job portal, but they focus a lot on the personality side, like taking personality quizzes and then tying your personalities to the job that you do. One, and then we are also working with JobStreet as well.
Of course,
When it comes to
not to work with them
in
this market.
Yeah, correct.
Anyway, there are also a lot of gig economy platforms today, right? Carpedia, Keto Care, Cult Creative, right? Cult Creative seems like there are some synergies there, given the marketing basis. Are you looking at these kind of platforms as well to potentially work with?
Not at this point. We are focusing very much on closing the skill gap between the job side and
so more employment.
Correct, more employment focus at this point. And then obviously for working professionals that are in the executive side. So very much closing that gap, but hey, who knows? Very interesting, though. Idea.
Back in the day, when you were did in-person physical training, you had HRDC, you could utilize HRDC. HRDC today. Are you hoping to be able to do the same thing here?
Definitely. We're finding a way. Hopefully in the next 2 months, we will be HRDC certified in terms of the online learning and the accreditation and certification learning. So stay tuned for that.
I'm sure we'll catch up after that. So partnership and collaborations, better. You're incentivizing creators to be on the platform. You're tapping into networks for more creators. Also a very big B2B corporate focus, right? I guess that's where the wallets, the spend is.
Yes.
You want to continue to develop once you can prove that this can help
Correct.
Develop their employees. Where is the business in terms of profitability today?
We are actually self-sustaining already at this point. We're
so
currently
break even for sure.
Yes, break even for sure. That's why we're targeting the 2 million mark, because ideally with the 2 million mark, we are sustainable, but we also have a certain amount of profit to be able to kind of put back into the company, but also be able to reward, grow ourselves, scale.
Reward employees who've been along the
correct.
Way.
Correct. Because in the next couple of years, our goal is to tap into the Southeast Asian market. I think this year, a lot of our focus in Malaysia is Malaysia, different states, and then into Singapore, which is why we have Singaporean partners at this point. But in the upcoming years, in the next 3 to 5 years, our goal is Southeast Asian market. We want to be able to tap into Philippines, Indonesia, very big learning market there, and we want to be able to branch into all the different Southeast Asian market and get creators from the Southeast Asian market to come on board.
And today, you're more Malaysian, Singapore focused, correct? Most of the fund, so you've raised some external funding. I think earlier you mentioned Quest as well as Scale Up Accelerator in the early days. Are you looking to raise more funds as you can look, especially when you start looking overseas?
Yes, I think we are. I think more than raising funds, we are also looking for partners from those like countries, right?
Whether so strategic partners.
Yes, very strategic partners, or even VCs from that specific countries or people who are in the edutech space.
So you're not just looking for capital, you're looking for ins in the different networks there,
correct.
Because otherwise it can be very difficult to grow.
Southeast Asia market is, I think that's always the trickiest thing with Southeast Asia market. Localization is very important and having localized understanding is very important. So like for people to come into Malaysia is also a challenge, right? You need to know the market. So for us to want to go into Philippines and Indonesia, I know it's even more like they prefer a lot of their localized content, creators and things like that. So we know we have to find the right partners to be able to tap into that market.
Yeah, so it's the local content aspect that's really going to be able to make or break this long term. And if you go into a different market like Indonesia, everyone thinks, oh yeah, the next step is go to Indonesia, similar language, right? But it's such a big market, it's so different. And people have gone there and gotten burnt. So having the right partner can be essential there.
So you're
breaking even at this point, aiming to make some profitability this year if you hit that 2 million target.
Yes.
Fundraising rounds or if any plans to raise more funds will be tied to specific expansion goals.
Correct.
And you're looking for local partners in those other areas. And given that Open Minds is a key partner here, obviously you have an equity stake in the company as well. Open Minds obviously has some as well. What's the, I guess, what's the mandate from them long term? Like, you know, are they looking to spin this off into, you know, into an IPO or exit the, in this in the long term? Are they, what's their vision long term here?
Open, maybe I'll share a little bit about Open Academy's long-term plan, right? So our goal is to build, university is the best way I can term this, whether it's a university or not, because that's the closest thing that we're trying to build. But basically, it's like a learning ecosystem that we're trying to build. Essentially, that's why we are working together with content creators. We want to work with job portals. We want to work with universities, because we want to be able to be that learning ecosystem to link everyone together, to be to have students, which are the learners, to also have quote-unquote professors, which are the industry practitioners, but also build a community around so that we can upskill the learners all the way from A to Z, right? To get them from point A, which is you know, getting upskilling them, giving them the learning content, but being able to work or build their own business or grow and things like that. So that is kind of like the end goal, to build that learning ecosystem. We're currently maybe in phase one of that learning ecosystem, where we're looking at the learners, we're looking at the creator side. There's still very much a lot to do in terms of like the community and growing that ecosystem. But I think the end goal is to be able to build that university, a whole ecosystem of, a whole learning ecosystem for learners to be able to grow there.
That sounds very exciting, right? It's not just about, you know, a YouTube for education. This is that middle point, that that middleware for a lot of for education of the future. And that's the question today, right? What's the education of the future going to look like? Are you hoping that this will go beyond just employees coming to you to upskill? And, you know, this goes down to students after SPM. Let's go to Open Academy.
It's ideally, the scenario is Open Academy becomes an option. That's the plan, right? It's like, oh, uni, this, Open Academy, right? My Open Academy is my option to be able to make learning a little bit more accessible, attainable, and also, you know, affordable.
Yeah. I think so that's what we're going to do. The big, hairy, audacious goal out there. The moonshot, as some people like to say. And that does sound very exciting, Celine. And I do wish you all the best with that. And yes, I think it's only a matter of time before we catch up to see how things are going. On that note, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Folks, I've been speaking with Celine Ting, co-founder and managing director of online learning platform Open Academy. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on the BFM app or on bfm.my. Our shows are also available on all your regular podcasting apps. Just look for Open for Business. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You've been listening to Open for Business. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.